It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Zone Media. Hi, I'm Ed Zitron, and welcome back to Better Offline. Better Offline. As I discussed in my last episode, there are four intractable problems that are going to stop generative AI from going much further. It's massive energy demands, it's massive computation demands, it's hallucinations when it authoritatively tells you something that isn't true or makes horrible mistakes in images, and the fact that these large language models have this insatiable need for more training data. Yet I think what might pop this bubble is a far simpler problem. Generative AI simply does not deliver the magical automation that everybody has been fantasizing about, and I don't think consumers or enterprises are actually impressed. A year and a half after launch, it seems like the kind of immediate and unquestioning infatuation with ChatGPT and, for that matter, other generative AIs, has softened. Instead, there's this rising undercurrent of apathy and mistrust and, of course, failure that's kind of hard to ignore. In June 2023, traffic to ChatGPT's website, where people access the ChatGPT bot in a web browser, fell for the first time since launch, starting a trend that's continued for five of the following 8 months, according to data from SimilarWeb. People are becoming more aware of the technology's limitations, like, as I mentioned, hallucinations, which, as I know, is when ChatGPT confidently asserts things that aren't true, which can be in writing when it gives you an incorrect fact, or in an image when it gives a dog 18 legs. To make matters worse, according to data from data.ai, which used to be known as App Annie, ChatGPT's downloads on iOS have begun to drop from a high of just over 700,000 a week to a plateau of around 450,000 to 500,000 a week since early 2023, which sounds impressive until you hear that only 7.35% of people who downloaded ChatGPT in January 2024 actually used the app again 30 days after they downloaded it, cratering from a high of 28% a month after the app launched in June 2023. In fact, things immediately appeared to have fallen apart. In July 2023, only 2 months after launch, only 4.59% of users opened the app for a second time. Numbers like these tell the story of a buzzy new application that isn't actually providing users with much utility. I think the generative AI engine has started to sputter for customers, for businesses, and indeed for the startups that create them. That's bad news for any industry that's yet to reach profitability or indeed sustainability. And especially for generative AI, which remains reliant on a kind of an indefinite supply of cash to operate. Back in April 2023, Dylan Patel, chief analyst at SemiAnalysis, calculated that GPT-3, the previous generation of ChatGPT, current ones known as GPT-4, cost around $700,000 a day to run. It's about $21 million a month or $250 million a year. In October 2023, Richard Windsor, the research director at large of Counterpoint Research, which is one of the more reliable analyst houses, hypothesized that OpenAI's monthly cash burn was in the region of $1.1 billion a month, based on them having to raise $13 billion from Microsoft, most of it, as I've noted, in credits for its Azure cloud computing service to run their models. It could be more, it could be less. As a private company, only investors and other insiders can possibly know what's going on in OpenAI. However, 4 months later, Reuters would report that OpenAI made about $2 billion in revenue in 2023, a remarkable sum that, much like every other story about OpenAI, never mentions profit. In fact, I can't find a single reporter that appears to have asked Sam Altman about how much profit OpenAI makes, only breathless hype with no consideration of its sustainability. Even if OpenAI burns a tenth of Windsor's estimate, about $100 million a month, that's still far more money than they're making. There's not a single story out there talking about them making a profit, and I don't think they're making one. Here's one thing we can be certain of, though. Things are getting more expensive. Progress in generative AI means increasingly complex models, and as I previously mentioned, OpenAI's attempted, Arrakis model, one built specifically to wow Microsoft by making ChatGPT more efficient, failed to actually make it more efficient. Their attempts to make this a better company are not working. Windsor, the aforementioned analyst, in a separate blog, also pointed out that there's nothing really sticky about these companies. There's nothing stopping someone from switching from, say, ChatGPT to Anthropic's Claude 2 model. They're all trained on similar datasets, and they all produce very similar answers. And while one model might be better at one thing than another, they're fundamentally very, very similar. There's also nothing stopping someone from simply giving up on generative AI altogether. It doesn't seem to be the plug-and-play automation god that everybody's been repping it to be. And judging by the plateauing ChatGPT user numbers, I think that might already be happening. It's also important to remember that while generative AI is shiny and new, artificial intelligence is absolutely not. And over the past decade, it's found a number of homes, from expensive security apps that detect when a hacker is trying to break into a corporate network, to spam filters, proofreading tools like Grammarly, plenty of things. Even Siri on your iPhone. In these contexts, AI is either a small component of a larger product or something that directly builds on human efforts. This stuff is actually valuable. AI-based spam filters are typically better than those reliant on hand-coded rules, for example, but it's also, from a marketing perspective, kind of boring. Generative AI's allure is that it can supplant humans, either partially or entirely, producing entire creative works that otherwise would have taken hours and carried a real financial cost. But behind this glitzy technology and media hype, the unspoken truth is that generative AI holds sway over the financial markets because it's regarded as a tool to eliminate an entire swath of jobs in the creative and knowledge economies. It's a ghastly promise, and it underpins the vast market value of otherwise commercially unviable generative AI companies like OpenAI and Anthropic. And it's what is driving, I believe, the multi-billion dollar investments we've seen from Microsoft, Amazon, and Google. Yet I see no evidence of mass adoption of generative AI. And my research suggests that enterprise adoption, which is the meat of what would actually make these companies money, it just isn't there. Deep within the earnings reports and the quotes of every major cloud provider claiming that the AI revolution is here is a deeply worrying trend. The AI revenue really isn't contributing much to the bottom line outside of vacuous media coverage. And I think the internal story is going to be much bleaker.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season remind us to embrace change and fearlessly look toward the future. Like Andrew Jarecki, award-winning filmmaker and creator of Movie Phone.
The studios didn't really control the theaters didn't control the studios. And I thought, well, there's a window in here where I could make things easier for the consumer and also make something that would be very useful for the industry.
Or Kellen Kenney, Chief Marketing and Growth Officer at AT&T. who installed fiber in customers' houses rather than leading from afar.
It is so crucial that you spend time with the customers. That is the best lesson.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In early March, The Information published the story about Amazon and Google tamping down generative AI expectations, with these companies dousing their salespeople's excitement about the capabilities of the tech they're selling. A tech executive is quoted in the article saying that customers are beginning to struggle with questions, simple questions like, is AI actually providing value? And how do I evaluate how AI is doing? And a Gartner analyst told Amazon Web Services sales staff that the AI industry was at the peak of the hype cycle around large language models and other generative AI, which is a somewhat specific code for it's not going to get much better anytime soon. This article confirms many of my suspicions that, and I quote The Information here, other software companies that have touted generative AI as a boon to enterprises are still waiting for revenue to emerge, citing the example of professional services firm KPMG buying 47,000 subscriptions to Microsoft's Copilot AI at a significant discount on the $30 a seat sticker price. Except KPMG bought these subscriptions without really having gauged whether their employees actually got anything out of it. They bought it, and I'm not kidding you, entirely so that if any KPMG customers ask questions about AI, they'll be able to answer them. God, we're so clearly in the boat. Oh my God. Anyway, as I've hinted, it's also not obvious how much AI actually contributes to the bottom line. In Microsoft's Q4 2023 earnings report, Chief Financial Officer Amy Hood reported that 6 points of revenue growth in its Azure and Cloud Services division was attributed to AI services. I went around the web and I read every bloody article about their earnings. I looked, and everyone was saying, oh, this is really good. I found someone who said it was 6% of their revenue, and I went, that sounds like complete bollocks to me. So I went and spoke with Jordan Navet, who's covered Microsoft for many years. He's a great cloud reporter over at CNBC, and he actually covered Microsoft's earnings for CNBC itself. And he confirmed that what this means is that AI contributed 6% of the 30% of year-over-year growth in Microsoft's Azure cloud services. That is a percentage of a percentage. So, by the way, that means, so 30% growth year-over-year, so 6% year-over-year growth is from AI. Could be good, but also all of the rest of it came not from new products, just from the natural growth of the company. It's unclear how much money that really is, but 6% of the year-over-year growth isn't really that exciting. Anyway, elsewhere, Amazon CEO Andy Jassy, who took over from Bezos a few years ago and was the chief of Amazon Web Services, said that generative AI revenue was still relatively small. But don't worry, he said it would drive tens of billions of dollars of revenue over the next several years, adding that virtually every consumer business Amazon operated in already had or would have generative AI offerings. Now, they can just say that stuff. I really want you to know, you can say what you want on earnings calls. As long as you're not just
outright lying, like saying we have $100 billion in cash, but you have $50. That is a lie. You can't do that. But you can be like, oh yeah, mate, we've got all sorts of AI and everything now. It's bloody magical. You should try to take it. You don't take a look, but it's there. I promise you. They can just say what they want. But don't worry, they're not the only ones. Salesforce Chief Financial Officer Amy Weaver said in their most recent earnings call that Salesforce was not factoring in material contribution from Salesforce's numerous AI products in its financial year 2025 guidance. Software company Adobe's shares slid in their last earnings as the company failed to generate meaningful revenue from its masses of AI products, with analysts now worried about its ability to actually monetize any of these generative products. ServiceNow claimed in its earnings that generative AI was meaningfully contributing to its bottom line, yet a story from The Information quotes their chief financial officer as saying that from a revenue contribution perspective, it's not going to be huge. I'm going to be a bit honest, I'm feeling a little insane with this stuff. I feel crazy every time I think about these stories, because elsewhere in the media, so many people are saying how big and successful the generative AI revolution is, and it's going to be. Yet every time I look at the actual places where they write down how much money it makes, any of the actual signs of growth and significance and utility and adoption, it's just not there. It's just breathless hype with this kind of whisper of stagnation and non-existent adoption. And while there are startups beginning to mine usefulness out of generative AI, and they do it inside by like automating internal queries and customer support questions, these are integrations rather than revolutions, and they're far from the substance of a true movement. Maybe the darker truth of the generative AI boom is that it's a feature, not a product, and that these features might be built entirely off the back of large language models, which are unsustainable to run, grow, or even make better. What if AI only drives a couple percentage points of real revenue growth for these companies? What if what we're seeing today is the upper limit, not the beginning? Honestly, I'm beginning to believe that a large part of the AI boom is just hot air, and it's being pumped up through a combination of executive bullshittery and a very compliant media that's so happy to write stories imagining what AI can do, yet seems unable to check what it can do or what it's doing. It's so weird. Now, there's a bloke over at the Wall Street Journal called Chip Cutter who you should really look into if you want to know why your boss keeps asking you to go back to the office. Wall Street Journal's Chip Cutter, he loves to write things about how bosses are good and how returning to the office is good. He wrote a piece in March about how AI is being integrated into the office, and most of it was just hundreds of words of him guessing about what people might do. But when he gets to the bottom and he starts talking about companies using it, it's almost entirely examples of people saying, yeah, it makes too many mistakes for us to rely on it and we're just experimenting it. Elsewhere in the media, the New York Times talked with Salesforce's head of AI, Clara Shear, and in this, I think it was 600, 700 word article, didn't really get her to say much of anything about AI or what their products do. All she said was that their Einstein trust layer handles data, and you may think I'm being facetious here, that's all she said about that. And then she added that it would be transformational for jobs the way the internet was. What? What does that mean? Why am I reading this in the newspaper? Why is this what I read in the newspaper? How is this helping? I know I rant a lot on this podcast, and I'm going to keep doing it. You're stuck with me, all right? It's free, okay? You don't pay for this, unless you do Cooler Zone Media, which you should pay for. Anyway, I know I'm ranting, but the reason that this stuff really infuriates me is it's misinformation on some level. I know it's kind of dramatic to say, oh, they're misinforming people by suggesting that AI can do stuff, but it is. It is misinformation. When you're letting corporate executives go in the newspaper and talk about how amazing their products will be without asking them what they can do today, you're just giving them free press. You're not giving them credit for stuff they've done. You're giving them credit for things they're making up on the spot. And when you do that, you make the rich richer and the poor poorer. You centralize power in the hands of assholes. People who are excited, people who are borderline masturbatory, jumping around saying, oh God, I can't wait till I can replace humans with fucking computers. Good news is they're not going to be able to, but that's what they're excited about, and that's what they're getting media coverage around. The media has been fooled, just like they were with the metaverse, by this specious promise train of the generative AI generation and these worthless executives championing it. These half-truths and this magical thinking has spread far faster due to the fact that AI actually exists and is doing something. And it's actually much easier to imagine how it might change our lives, unlike the metaverse. Even if the way it might do so is somewhere between improbable and impossible, it is easy to think about how it might work. You could use an AI to automate data entry or boring, busy work. Surely all of this you can automate, right? And when you use ChatGPT, you can almost kind of sort of somewhat see how it might happen. Even if when you open up ChatGPT and try and make it do something, it's always a bit off. Never seems to quite do it. I'm in my day job, my PR firm, I'm in a spreadsheet and document heavy business. Of all the people who this could help, you'd think it would be me. A lot of my work is, hey, all of these links I need them in a spreadsheet. It can't bloody do it. And I'm sure you listeners will probably email me and say, oh, I've used ChatGPT for this. Don't care. I really mean that. This thing is not changing the world. And actually, I think far more of you have already shared. Thank you, by the way, easy@betteroffline.com. You can email me your ideas and your angry comments. You can go to the Reddit to complain. But the thing I'm hearing from most people is, yeah, I've tried it and it didn't do enough. I tried it and there were too many mistakes. There was a Wall Street Journal article back in February about how Amazon and Google were having trouble selling AI services because, well, when they went to sell them, these companies, these financial services companies in particular, they were saying, yeah, but these hallucinations could actually get the SEC mad at us. And the answer that they had was, yeah, what if we just made it so that the models would sometimes say they don't know stuff? Every time you get to a reckoning with AI where you want it to be better, where you're like, hey, AI executive, how will this actually be fixed, these hallucination problems, for example? They come up with the most mealy-mouthed shit. And I truly believe it's because there is no answer to these problems, as I said in the previous episode. And I think that's why I can't find any companies that have integrated generative AI in a way that's truly improved their bottom line, other than Klarna, which allows you to do 0% interest-free loans on almost anything. It's a very worrying company. Anyway, they claimed that their AI-powered support bot was estimated to drive a $40 million amount in profit improvement in 2024, which does not, by the way, despite it being trumpeted by members of the media otherwise, mean that they made $40 million in profit. I actually can't find what profit improvement refers to. And this is the classic AI boom story, by the way. There's always this weird verbal judo going on where they're like, yeah, it's $40 million in profit improvement upwards and downwards and side to side, mate. It's really good. And I think it's just headline grabbing. I think it's just buzz. And despite fears to the contrary, AI doesn't appear to be replacing a large amount of workers. And when it has, the results have been pretty terrible. Like when Microsoft replaced MSN.com's editorial team with a series of AI bots that have spread misinformation and conspiracy theories, things like Joe Biden falling asleep. It's so weird. Interestingly, there was also a study from Boston Consultancy Group. And just as a note, if anyone would love the opportunity to just replace workers with robots, it's BCG, McKinsey, Accenture. All these companies would absolutely, they would be giving however much OpenAI wanted to do that. And then they were charged $50 million for an integration that didn't work, which I guess makes AI perfect for them. Putting that aside, in a study from BCG, they found that consultants that solved business problems with OpenAI's GPT-4 model performed 23% worse than those who didn't use it, even when the consultant was warned about the limitations of generative AI and the risk of hallucinations. Yeah, really great stuff. To be clear, I am not advocating for the replacement of workers with AI. However, I'm saying that if it was actually capable of replacing human outputs, even if it was even anywhere near doing so, any number of these massive, horrifying firms would be doing so at scale and planning to do so more as the models improve. They'd be funneling cash right up OpenAI's arse. It would be incredible. But the reality of the AI boom is kind of a little more boring. It recently came out that Amazon's cashless Just Walk Out technology in some of their stores, you could walk in, scan a QR code, and then you could just grab your Rouse tomato sauce and your condoms or whatever, your weird magazines. I don't know what they're selling there. I'm not giving any more money to Amazon than I need to. Anyways, everyone thought, oh, it's just AI. You could just walk in. It's magic. The cameras would tell you through computer vision what you had bought. It would be great. Now, it turns out that there's 1,000 workers in India that were monitoring these cameras and approving transactions. Worse still, OpenAI used Kenyan workers who were paid less than $2 an hour to train ChatGPT's outputs. And they currently pay $15 an hour, I think, for American contractors. No benefits, of course. You know, fuck workers, right? That's the thing. Underneath this whole thing is just this undercurrent of disrespect for human beings, and it pisses me off. And I realize I'm pissed off about a lot of things. You've been listening for like an hour now. Well, half an hour in this episode. Anyway, I'll keep going. But yeah, like I said, if AI was changing things, if AI was actually capable of replacing a person, it would have happened. It would be happening right now. It'd be happening at scale. It would be so much worse than things feel now. Unless, of course, it just wasn't possible. What if what we're seeing today is not a glimpse of the future, but actually the new terms of the present? What if generative AI isn't actually capable of doing much more than what we're seeing today? What if there's not really a clear timeline when it will actually be able to do more? What if this entire hype cycle has been built, goosed, and propped up by this compliant media ready and willing to take whatever these career-embellishing bullshitters have to say? What if this is just another metaverse, but with a little bit more product? Every single time I've read about the amazing things that artificial intelligence can do, I just see somebody attempting to add fuel to a fire that's close to going out. When the Wall Street Journal's Joanna Stern wrote about Sora, OpenAI's yet-to-be-released video-generating chatbot, she talked about how its photorealistic clips were good enough to freak her out. And I get it. At first glance, these do look like people. These images do, they look like something approaching a video. They look almost real. Kind of like text from ChatGPT is almost right, or it's right fully, but it doesn't feel right. But much like the rest of these outputs, you look a little closer, and they have these weird errors, like cars disappearing in and out of the shot, or a different car coming out from behind something, or completely different images between frames, or these strange, unrealistic moments of lighting. And they're never much longer than 30 seconds. Stern, who, by the way, I deeply respect, isn't really afraid of what Sora can do, but what would happen if OpenAI was able to fix the hallucination problems that makes these videos kind of unwatchable? While it's easy to imagine tools like Sora could eventually play a role in online disinformation campaigns, churning out like lifelike videos of politicians saying or doing appalling things, we can all breathe a sigh of relief in knowing that the videos themselves are often so flawed, you can pretty much instantly see they're AI generated. Also, Sora is not available to the public yet, and I don't even know if it ever will be. You just need to look at the hands or the backgrounds. Look at the people in the background of any AI-generated photo or video. They often contain too many fingers, or you can't see their faces. Or in Sora's videos, their legs don't look right. It's so weird. And I don't know how to put it perfectly, but they don't feel human. Just to be clear, though, Sora is dead on arrival. No one actually has access to it. It's unclear when it will come out. Every journalist that has quote-unquote used Sora has just given a prompt to OpenAI to run. But there's also a very obvious problem that kind of relates to something I mentioned in the previous episode. OpenAI and every generative AI company, they're all dependent on high-quality data to train the models. And video data is so much larger, more complex, and harder to find. There's less of it because it's visual media. And it's just a much bigger, more complex model and a much harder computational task to create video. Moving image is, it's actually kind of, putting aside my anger about generative AI, it's amazing they've done even this. But to be clear, as amazing as it might look, it isn't enough to do anything. It's just a kind of a doohickey. And this data is so much more complex than the text-based data that OpenAI is running out of to make ChatGPT spit out words. Even if there were enough data, there's pretty good reason why OpenAI is coy about when they'll release the model. Like I said, it's expensive and complex to run, and at no point has anyone asked how the fuck this actually makes them any money, how they sell this. It's so weird. To be clear, when you use Sora, it turns text prompts into a video. You can't edit the video, you can't change the video. The video is what the video looks like. There's no way to make Sora make the same thing multiple times, which makes the very basics of making film, which is multiple angles of the same thing, completely goddamn impossible. In fact, consistency between the same two prompts is impossible from these models because they're all probabilistic. We've recently seen some of the first quote-unquote movies made with Sora, and the first one was called Airhead, which is about a minute long. It's this man with a balloon head walking around, and it's got this, it's very twee, it sucks. It's just, putting aside the AI part, it's just crappy. And it's got a guy being like, yeah, having a balloon head is difficult. Yeah, it's weird. I hate having a balloon head. I hope I don't get popped. It sucks. It's really bad filmmaking. But also, each shot, and there's multiple shots of this guy with a yellow balloon head, looks completely different. It's a different balloon every goddamn time. And it's so funny because you have these guys on Twitter going like, Oh my God, I'm crying and pissing myself. This is the best thing I've ever seen. But it isn't. It's so close yet so far away. And the only reason it's impressive is people are willing to sit there and say, but what if it wasn't shit? But it is. It really is. Like every other generative output, it's superficially impressive, kinda sort of lifelike, but once you look at it for more than a moment, it's just flawed, terribly, irrevocably flawed. It's time to wake up. We are not in the early days of AI, we're decades in, and we're approaching the top of the S-curve of innovation. There are products being built, don't worry, but it's all things like Claude Author, which creator Matt Schumer calls a chain of AI systems that will write an entire book for you in minutes, and I call a new kind of asshole that can shit more than you'd ever believe. Generative AI is the ugliest creation of the rot economy, and its main selling point is that it can generate a great deal of passable material. Images generated from generative AI models like OpenAI's DALL-E all have the same kind of eerie feel to them, as they're mostly trained on the same data, some of it licensed from Shutterstock, some of it outright plagiarized from hundreds of artists. Without sounding too wanky and philosophical, everything created by generative AI feels soulless, and that's because it is. No matter how detailed the prompt, no matter how well-trained the model, no matter how well-intentioned the person writing that prompt, these are still mathematical solutions to the emotional problem of creation. One cannot recreate the subtle fuck-ups and delightful little neurological errors that make writing a book or a newsletter or a podcast special. While this podcast is admittedly trying to generate what I believe AI might do in the future, it's not generative, and it's not generated as a result of me mathematically considering how likely an outcome is. My fury is not generated by an algorithm telling me that this is the right thing to be angry at. I'm pissed off because I feel like we're all being lied to and treated like idiots. What makes things created by humans special isn't doing the right thing or the best thing, but the outputs that result in us fighting past our own imperfections and maladies, like the strep infection I've been fighting for the last few days. And like, look, to my knowledge, you can't give a generative AI strep throat, but if I ever find out it's possible, I will make it my damn mission to give it to ChatGPT.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season remind us to embrace change and fearlessly look toward the future. Like Andrew Jarecki, award-winning filmmaker and creator of Movie Phone.
The studios didn't really control the theaters. The theaters didn't control the studios. And I thought, well, there's a window in here where I could make things easier for the consumer and also make something that would be very useful for the industry.
Or Kellen Kenny, Chief Marketing and Growth Officer at AT&T, who installed fiber in customers' houses rather than leading from afar.
It is so crucial that you spend time with the customers. That is the best lesson.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, then look no further than the Marketing School podcast hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Sue. It is the number one marketing podcast in the United States and number 15 on business in the United States. And it has amazing guests such as Alex Hormozi, Layla Hormozi, Cody Sanchez. We pull in these amazing interviews with other people that are not only great marketers, but actual operators. And the icing on the cake is Neil and myself were also operators as well. So we share learnings from the trenches. We share secrets that we otherwise wouldn't be sharing with other people. And we also share other advantages that will help you get ahead of your competition. So all you have to do is listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All of this hype is predicated on solving problems with artificial intelligence models that are only getting worse. And OpenAI's only answers to these problems are a combination of, we'll work it out eventually, trust me, and we need a technological breakthrough in both chips and energy. That's why Sam Altman has been trying to raise $7 trillion, and that's not a mistake, by the way, to make a new kind of AI chip, because there's no sign that this or even future generations of chips will actually fix anything. Generative AI's core problems, its hallucinations, its massive energy, and its massive, unprofitable compute demands are not close to being solved. I've now watched a frankly alarming amount of interviews with both OpenAI's CEO Sam Altman and their CTO Mira Murati, and every time they're saying the same specious empty talking points, promising that in the future, ChatGPT will do this and that, as all evidence points to their models getting worse. And through the last years, by the way, they've just said the same thing in every interview. They always talk about ChatGPT being like something that will help creatives. They never really say how. It's just kind of weird. But yeah, generative AI models, they're expensive, they're compute intensive, and they don't seem to provide obvious, tangible mass market use cases. Murati and Altman's futures depend heavily on keeping the world believing that development and improvement of these models' capabilities will continue at this rapacious pace of progress, even though it's unquestionably slowed. With OpenAI even admitting themselves that their latest model, GPT-4, may actually be worse at some tasks. A study from UC Berkeley last year found that GPT-4 was actually worse at coding than before, and that ChatGPT was, at times, refusing to do certain tasks. Nobody wants to work anymore. Well, I feel like I'm walking down the street telling people their houses are on fire, only to be told to stop insulting their new heating system. These models aren't intelligent. They're mathematical behemoths generating the best guess on training data and labeling, and thus they don't really know what they're being asked to do. You can't fix that. You can't fix hallucinations. You can't just make these problems go away with more compute, you can mitigate them. The current philosophy, by the way, is that you can use another model to look at another model's outputs, which, as I mentioned in the previous episodes, is very silly. But seriously, everyone telling you hallucinations are going away, look a little deeper and look at when they actually failed to tell you how they will. It's just very silly. Look, every bit of excitement for this technology right now is based on this idea of what it might do, as I've said. And that quickly gets conflated with what it could do, which allows Sam Altman, who, by the way, is far more of a marketing person than an engineer, his one startup Looped was a failure. He's failed upwards. He was in Y Combinator and he did this. It's actually ridiculous he's so famous. All of this bullshit, it allows him to sell the dream of OpenAI, and he's selling it based on the least specific promises I've seen since Mark Zuckerberg said we'd live in our bloody Oculus headsets. And it's frustrating, because this money and this attention could go to important things. We have real problems in society. I believe that Sam Altman, and pretty much anyone in a position of power and influence in the AI space, has been tap dancing this entire time, hoping that he could amass enough power and revenue that his success would be inevitable. Yet I think his hype campaign has been a little bit too successful. And it's deeply specious, and he, along with the rest of the AI industry, has found himself suddenly having to deliver a future that he's not even close to developing. I am always scared of automation taking our jobs. I think it's always worth being scared of. But I don't think that's the thing the tech industry is working on right now. I don't think they're close. And I think there's something more imminent to fear. And that thing is the bottom falling out of generative AI, as companies realize that the best they're going to see is maybe a few digits of profit growth. Companies like Nvidia, Google, Amazon, Snowflake, and Microsoft, they have hundreds of billions of dollars of market capitalization, as well as expected revenue growth, tied into the idea that everyone's going to integrate AI into everything, and that they'll be doing more than they are today. You can already see the desperation coming from these companies, like Microsoft, for example, which in March effectively absorbed a company called Inflection AI into itself, kind of an acquisition by stealth. Inflection AI is a public benefit company that portrays itself as a nicer, gentler version of OpenAI. Its core product, a ChatGPT-style chatbot, touts its empathetic tone, its humor, and its emotional awareness. Inflection was created in 2022 with an all-star founding team that included Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn, and Mustafa Suleiman, the British-born co-founder of DeepMind, which Google acquired in 2014. In mid-2023, Microsoft took part in a $1.3 billion funding round, which saw the company acquire a significant stake in Inflection alongside other AI players like Nvidia. Inflection's core product has the same inherent underlying issues as every other generative AI product, hallucinations, for example. But it has an accomplished team that has taken a different approach to its competitors. Whereas ChatGPT and Claude 2 tend to be, or at least aspire to be, functional, tools that provide information or complete tasks, Inflection sought to make its product feel a bit more organic. For Microsoft, the appeal was obvious. It has so much riding on its AI ambitions, both in terms of money spent as well as its share price, that it can't really afford to appear stagnant or, worse, as though it made a bad bet. Acquiring Inflection would help it maintain its image, especially with idiot Wall Street analysts. But here's the problem. Microsoft already holds a massive stake in OpenAI, and regulators, both in America and Europe, are wary of market consolidation. Acquiring Inflection, it'd give them a little too much scrutiny. So Microsoft took a third nastier path. Instead of buying the company, it bought the employees, with Suleiman and the majority of his co-workers jumping ship to found Microsoft's new AI division. It secured the talent, a subsequent $650 million licensing deal, yet another example of Microsoft basically paying itself, and then gave that deal to the shell of Inflection, you know, the one without any of the staff left, giving it access to the company's tech, its IP, and there's nothing regulators could do to stop it. To be clear, Microsoft is in a position where it could easily absorb the shockwave of a potential AI bubble burst. It still prints money from its other business units like Office and cloud computing, Microsoft Windows, and the Xbox gaming system. And the same is true for the other big names like Google and Nvidia. They're well insulated for any slowdown in AI investment or from a growing apathy towards AI enterprise customers. I will note, however, these massive investments in data centers, if they're all for naught, you will see a form of crash. I can't say the same for startups, though. Other companies aren't going to be so lucky. Stability AI, the developer of Stable Diffusion, a generative AI that can produce images from written prompts, innovative for the time, is perhaps the canary in the coal mine of peak AI. Stability AI rode the same waves as OpenAI, especially in 2023, but now that money is tighter and skepticism is higher, it's struggling to stay afloat. Although the company raised $100 million in early 2023, it burned through nearly $8 million a month, and in a recent attempt to raise further cash, they failed. The company routinely missed payroll, and according to Forbes, amassed a sizable debt with the US tax authorities that culminated in threats to seize the company's assets. They owed debts to Amazon, Google, and CoreWeave, a niche compute provider that specializes in AI applications. With negligible revenues and rapid cash burn, combined with no obvious way to monetize the product, Stability AI is now in turmoil, with its key talent leaving the company in March, followed by the company's CEO and co-founder, Imad Mustaq. Its ongoing existence is in question, with the Financial Times writing in March that the company's future, despite once being seen as among the world's most promising startups, is in doubt. While it would be fair to say that Stability AI was unique in its internal turmoil, its external pressures, the ability or lack thereof to monetize an expensive product, and its reliance on external funding to survive are much more common across the industry. Its survival depended on investors believing in a lofty future for AI, where it's integrated into every facet of our lives, and it plays a role in almost every industry, which of course we now know it doesn't. While that belief hasn't been shattered, or at least not yet, it's fair to say that expectations and aspirations are increasingly tempered. After reaching the apex of the AI piss fest, the tech industry is getting a hangover, and companies like Stability can't survive the headache. But to be clear, I am not excited for the AI bubble to pop. And on some level, as weird as it sounds, I kind of hope it doesn't. Once it bursts, the AI bubble will hit far more than the venture capitalists that propped it up. This hype cycle has driven the global stock markets to their best first quarter in 5 years. And once the markets fully turn on the companies that falsely promised an AI revolution, it's going to lead to a massive market downturn and another merciless round of layoffs throughout the tech sector, led by Microsoft, Google, and Amazon. This will in turn suppress tech labor and flood the market with tech talent. It's going to suck for everyone involved in software. A market crash led by the tech industry will only hurt innovation further, draining the already low amounts going into the hands of venture capitalists that control the dollars going into new startups. And once again, the entire industry will suffer because people don't want to build new things or try new ideas. No, they want to fund the same people doing the same things or similar things again and again because it feels good to be part of a consensus, even if you're wrong. Silicon Valley will continually fail to innovate at scale until it learns to build real things again, things that people actually use and things that actually do something. I don't know if I want to be right or wrong here. If I'm wrong, generative AI could replace millions of people's jobs, something that far too many people in the media are excited about, despite the fact that the media is the first industry that OpenAI kind of wants to automate. If I'm right, we're going to face a dot-com bubble-esque downturn in tech, one that's far worse than what we saw in the last few years. In any case, I do wish the tech industry would get their heads out of their asses. I'm tired. I'm tired of watching tech firms lie through their teeth about the future, that we'll live in the metaverse, that our future will be decentralized and paid for in cryptocurrency, and that our world will be automated with chatbots. I truly think that these companies think regular people are stupid, which is why Microsoft put out a minute-long Super Bowl commercial for their Copilot AI that featured several prompts, like write the code for my 3D open world game, that don't actually do anything. That prompt I just mentioned, go type it into Copilot. It will give you a guide to coding a game. No code created. Also, in the commercial, he types in classic truck shop called Paul's, but none of these image generators can actually do words, so it just looks like skabububub. Go and do it. Trust me, it's funny. But every time that these big tech booms happen, every time they say, ooh, we're going to live in the metaverse, and ooh, we're going to be able to automate everything, every time they lie, the world turns against the tech industry. And this particular boom is so craven in its falsehoods that I think it'll have a dramatic chilling effect on tech valuations if the bubble pops quite as severely as I expect. And Sam Altman desperately needs you to believe the bubble won't pop. He needs you to believe that generative AI will be essential, inevitable, and intractable. Because if you don't, you'll suddenly realize that trillions of dollars of market capitalization and revenue are being blown on something that's kind of mediocre. If you focus on the present, what OpenAI's technology can do today, and will likely do for some time, you see in terrifying clarity that generative AI isn't really a society-altering technology. It's just another form of efficiency-driving cloud compute software that benefits kind of a small amount of people. If you stop saying things like AI could do or AI will do, you have to start asking what AI can do. And the answer is not that much, and probably not that much more in the future. Sora is not going to generate entire movies. It's going to continue making horrifying human-adjacent creatures that walk like the AT-ATs from Star Wars, and cartoons that look remarkably like SpongeBob SquarePants. ChatGPT isn't going to run your business, because it can barely output a spreadsheet without fucking up the basic numbers, if it even understands what you're asking it to do in the first place. I think that AI has maybe three quarters to prove itself worthwhile before the apocalypse really arrives. When it does, you're going to see it first in the real infrastructure companies, starting with Nvidia, who's grown to about $2 trillion in market capitalization because of the chips they make, which are pretty much the only ones that can power the AI revolution. There are other companies like AMD and Micron, but Nvidia is the one that's really grown. If you watch any of their keynotes, they're insane. They're just full of fan fiction. Once Nvidia starts to see growth slow, and Oracle in particular, Oracle, massive data center company, massive database company as well, one of their largest customers, Microsoft, building data centers for them. Once that starts slowing down, that's when you should start worrying. But the real pain's going to come for Amazon, Microsoft, and Google, when it's clear that there's not really that much revenue going into their clouds. Once that happens, once you start seeing Jim Cramer on CNBC saying, "I don't think the AI boom is here," despite having saying it just was, that's when things get nasty. And the knock-on effects will be horrible. It's going to be genuinely painful, worse than we've seen the last few years. And it's all a result of the same problem. It's all a result of the growth-at-all-cost tech economy, when things are made to expand, when things are made to build more rather than build better. When you're building solutions to use compute power to sell cloud computing services rather than helping real people make their lives better. Tech is not building for real people anymore. And the AI revolution, despite its spacious hype, is not really for us. It's not for you and me. It's for people like Satya Nadella of Microsoft to claim that they've increased growth by 20%. It's for people like Sam Altman to buy another fucking Porsche. It's so that these people can feel important and be rich, rather than improving society at all. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe all of this is the future. Maybe everything will be automated. But I don't see the signs. This doesn't feel much different to the metaverse. There's a product, but in the end, what's it really do? Just like the metaverse, I don't think many people are really using it. All signs point to this being an empty bubble. And I'm sure you're sick of this too. I'm sure that you're sick of the tech industry telling you the future's here when it's the present and it fucking sucks. And I'm swearing a lot and I'm angry. But I'm justified in this anger I feel. I'm not telling you how to think, and I've heard from some of you saying, "Oh, don't tell me how to think," and I agree. I'm not here to tell you to be angry about anything, but I want to give you at least my truth, and I want to give you what I see is happening, because I don't feel like enough people are doing that in the tech industry. And that's what Better Offline is going to continue to be. And I really appreciate you listening. It's been about a month and a half since we started. It's only going to get better from here. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Better Offline.
The editor and composer of the Better Offline theme song is Matt Osowski. You can check out more of his music and audio projects at mattosowski.com. MattOsowski.com.
You can email me at easy@betteroffline.com or check out betteroffline.com to find my newsletter and more links to this podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Better Offline is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.